What's up, everybody? Welcome into Locked On Eagles, this Tuesday edition of the show. My name is Louis DiBiase, alongside my co-host, Gino Camilleri. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Took a one-day hiatus on Monday, but we did have an interesting show on Sunday for you. Kind of got into the Kelly Green jersey debate and whether or not the NFL should stop being buzzkills and let the Eagles wear two helmets and let the entire league wear two helmets and bring back Kelly Green. And if they did bring it back, how would they use them? Alternates? Would they take over Midnight Green? We talked about that. We got into a whole lot more on Sunday's edition. You can check that out on LockedOnEagles.com. Just tell when you hop in the car, you're making your commute to work, just tell Siri, just tell your smartphone, your smart device to play the Locked On Eagles podcast, and you will find it on whatever podcast platform that you listen to our podcast. And we always appreciate all the fan feedback. Really loved all the different, you know, comments and feedback of each episode that we've been getting on our Twitter accounts, which you can follow on Twitter at Locked On Birds, at DiBiase LOE, and at Gino _ LOE. So without further ado, let me bring in my co-host here, Gino Camilleri. What's up, sir?
Not much, man. Just another podcast, number two of the day. I was on earlier the First Down pod with Reese Mowlin, who's one of our listeners to the Locked On Eagles podcast. So it was cool to kind of go full circle and become the guest on his podcast. And he said he's been listening to us for a little bit. So shout out to Reese. And he's doing good things across the pond in the UK. And we're continuing to grow our UK following. And Reese made a good point to me, Lou, that I didn't really think about this in regards to why the UK has such a big following to our podcast. And he made a good point saying that they don't have the coverage like we do on ESPN or NFL Network. So for them to get information, podcasts is their go-to to get anything football. And that's pretty cool to hear. And the more good information we could provide you guys, the more listens you could give us, and it works full circle, and it's cool that we're getting out there, expanding our horizons, expanding our listener base, and continuing to put out good work for everybody.
Yeah, look, the Eagles fans stretch out across the entire globe, and we always appreciate everyone that not only listens in the States, but over in Great Britain and Ireland, we got a big following, so we appreciate everyone out there, and it's awesome to see guys out there making their own Eagles podcast. It's really cool that it's stretched out that far, and you know, it's a humbling thing to hear that people use us as their Eagles coverage, because we're just a couple fans that just love to talk birds, and we appreciate that everyone is coming in and listening. And I know I talk a lot about DeSean Jackson coming back and a lot of the similar takes, but we appreciate you guys sticking with us over this first year as the new hosts of Locked On Eagles. As for today's episode, we're going to get into the Bengals potentially shopping John Ross, and me and Gino did last week. We talked about potential options for the Eagles to add a burner, a speedster when it comes to receivers, because they have so much else when it comes to passing targets with all the size, the great hands, the route running with Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert and Alshon Jeffrey. And while Nelson Agholor is their one fast athletic receiver, they need to add another one, so we kind of got into options. John Ross could be another one. The Bengals appear to be shopping the former 9th overall draft pick. So Gino's going to kind of – I want to do both sides here so everyone kind of knows what the pros of adding John Ross are, what the cons are. So I'm going to kind of get into why it would be a good idea. Gino will kind of go into why he's more hesitant. So that's coming up next on this first segment. And then also Tim Jernigan. The Eagles declined the option on Tim Jernigan in 2019, so officially right now – as of right now, it doesn't look like he's going to be with the Eagles, but I'm still very optimistic about a restructure. We'll get into that, as well as who could be next when it comes to some cap casualties or restructures. So that's coming up on today's episode of Locked On Eagles. But let's get into first here, Gino, some John Ross talk. The Bengals took him in the 2017 draft, 9th overall out of Washington. This was a guy that got a lot of comparisons to the DeSean Jackson, some of the burners in the NFL that can, you know, stretch it, hit those 60-yard bombs down the field. And look, he broke the 40-yard dash time at the combine. He broke Chris Johnson's record. So, you know, guys like that at the combine, those athletic just freaks, their stock rises. You even look at, Byron Jones from Dallas coming out of UConn. The guys that they test really well during the draft process, those guys go higher than maybe they should have. Ross went 9th overall, one pick ahead of Patrick Mahomes, which is, that's got to be the Bengals kicking themselves as they have still Andy Dalton throwing footballs for Cincinnati. But One first year, he misses the entire season, comes back last year, only has 21 receptions, does score 7 touchdowns, but doesn't even break the 400-yard receiving mark, wasn't really fully involved in that offense, and we'll kind of get into why that was, but he could be shopped now by the Bengals. That has been reported by a lot. Joe Goodberry of The Athletic from Cincinnati has been really getting into this. To me, the best Bengals guy out there, really diving into it, and it looks like the Bengals are shopping him after the emergence of Tyler Boyd, and of course, they still have A.J. Green as of now. I don't think they're shopping Green. We'll see what the plans are from Zach Taylor, their new head coach, but as of right now, it looks like John Ross could be on the trading block, Gino, and you seem a little bit more hesitant to me. Why is it that you know, and I get it. It's that, look, this is definitely a risk. This is not a player like an Antonio Brown where we're talking about, well, look, he's a baller on the field, but, you know, the character concerns are a major thing. John Ross has not proven anything in the NFL. So it's definitely a risk. While there are some pros to it, what to you are some of the cons?
Well, do you think he would have been drafted 9th overall if he didn't break the 40-time record?
No, and I look, we even got into it when we were talking about guys like Paris Campbell, who could really raise their stock if they perform well at the combine like they should. People love the speed element. So I agree with you. He shouldn't have been a 9th overall pick. Yeah.
I don't think he should have been picked 9th overall. I don't think he should have been picked that high in the first round in general. He's a guy that he benefited from such a poor draft class. I mean, you look up top. You have Corey Davis and Mike Williams. Corey Davis is doing very good things. Mike Williams is starting to come into his own. After that, you had a middling Zay Jones, who just is kind of a guy right now in Buffalo. Curtis Samuel in Carolina, still trying to find his niche. The best one in this class is Juju Smith-Schuster, and you could look at guys like Cooper Kupp. But outside of those top guys, this draft class was very poor. So, one, John Ross had the benefit of being in a bad draft class. If he was in that 2013 class with guys like Odell and Jordan Matt, like, I think he probably would have been a 3rd, 4th round pick, if you think about it. And his skill set is a guy that he needs those manufactured touches. We talk about guys like that, like the Eagles did with Golden Tate a lot during the middle of the season. He's a guy that, yes, he's a burner, but he's not the best route runner by any means. He played in the Pac-12 where route running is just basically invisible. Like, you don't get many great route runners out of the Pac-12 outside of that NFL-style offense out of Stanford and Washington at times. But at Washington, when he was there, he was just they would just get him the ball in his hands, make him – he does some good things after the catch. He can get downfield, but in the NFL, has he proven it so far? You know how I am with the DVOA stat from Football Outsiders, and I tweeted this today, that out of 84 eligible receivers last year who had 50, I think it was targets, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 50 targets. There were 84 players ranked. You want to guess who came in dead last with a minus 33.3%?
So it was Ross, huh?
Yep, and the guys above him were Quincy Enunwa, Jermaine Kearse, funny enough, Golden Tate, and then Kelvin Benjamin. So not a great list to be on. And frankly, yeah, he did have those 7 touchdowns. But even with Andy Dalton, like, he struggled to get open at times. Like, he did get open down the field a little bit. But for a guy as shifty as him, you would expect him to be open a lot more than he was last season. So those are just a few things. We could continue this discussion. But at first glance, I want nothing to do with John Ross.
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting. There's a lot of cons to this. And, you know, to me, though, I don't think it's going to be – I don't know what they're going to be asking for. That's the big part for me, is what are they asking for? If they're asking for a day 2 pick, obviously I'm going to scoff at that idea. Because he was a top 10 pick, maybe they're looking to get, you know, higher compensation than just bailing on him and getting a 5th-round pick. But from what I saw from Joe Goodberry, from what I saw about Ben Albright kind of speculating, if they had to guess what the compensation, what the asking price would be, they were talking about a mid-day 3 pick. So maybe we're looking at a 5th-round pick, maybe a 4th. A 4th or a 5th, to me, I don't know. I think it's doable, because while this is definitely a risk, the guy has torn his meniscus twice. I believe he tore his ACL as well. He tore something in his shoulder. So he had a lot of injuries at Washington. He missed his entire rookie season with Cincinnati because of injuries. That's the key to me, is if they avoid it. To me, more so, I know there hasn't been a whole lot of production on the field, but the bigger concern for me is injuries. If they are not concerned about that, or if they're willing to still give up a 4th or a 5th round pick, I kind of like the idea because it's a low-risk, high-reward move. The pick spent for Ross might be, you know, where you take a raw prospect like a Paris Campbell anyway, or I know you really like Mecole Hardman. You know, those guys, while more so Campbell, he's also a player where you have to get him involved, manufactured, where you get him a screen pass or he's 50-plus yards down the field. There's not really room in the middle there for Campbell to start. So one of those picks, if you're planning on spending one anyway on a raw, fast, athletic receiver, I'm okay with doing that for a guy like John Ross, who is only making $2 million right now, and he has some NFL experience. I know he didn't, you know, he only had 21 receptions last year, but he did score 7 touchdowns. He wouldn't be that relied upon either. He'd be, what, your fifth passing option? So, to me, it's a low-risk, high-reward option, and while if they're asking for a third-round pick, I'm not going to do it, but if they're asking for a day three pick, where I kind of want one of those burners anyway, I don't know. I'm kind of into it if he's healthy.
All right, let's continue with that trend of talking about trading a mid third round or a mid day three pick. So end of the fourth, the Eagles have a comp pick there. Cincinnati calls and says you can have John Ross, but New York Jets call and say you could have Robbie Anderson for that same pick. Who are you taking?
Oh, Robbie, I'm running to the Robbie Anderson move.
Oh, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I think there's more value for that pick if you were to give it up than to go for John Ross. John Ross is an unproven commodity in the NFL. Yes, he has all the skills. He's still not the best route runner, but he has the speed. If he can polish his route running under a good group of wide receivers, which the Eagles have seemed to do, still have yet to prove that they could develop a young receiver, so I'm kind of skeptical in that regard as well, but if you're going to bring him in and you're going to bring him in solely for a speed element, I'm bringing in Robbie Anderson. You look at John Ross last year, he only averaged 10 yards a catch. Like, Zach Ertz was almost at that area. Like, if you're going to get a guy that wants to take the top off the ball for a fourth round pick, I'm going Robbie Anderson. I'm saying, if I had to say right now, plan A, you bring in John Brown. Plan B, you bring in Robbie Anderson. Plan C, you draft a Mecole Hardman, Emmanuel Hall, Paris Campbell-esque type player in the middle of that draft. And four, you bring back DeSean Jackson. I think John Ross, out of the options that I just mentioned, is behind all of them. I think you can still get some juice from DeSean. I think you could develop one of those young guys into being a very good target for Carson Wentz and providing you with a little more juice than a John Ross, because those guys are all better route runners than John Ross was coming out of college. I think John Brown is my guy that I've been standing for, and I think Robbie Anderson, this team has shown a lot of interest in, one, in the draft, and two, at the deadline this year that you know that they called about, and you know that I think the Jets wanted a third-round pick for him. If it would have been a fourth, I think the Eagles would have given it up over Golden Tate.
So I don't really disagree with anything you said. Like, I would much rather have a John Brown. I'd much rather have a DeSean Jackson. Robbie Anderson, I'm concerned because I feel like the Jets might place that tender on him, the first-round tender. I don't know what they're going to do with that. But look, if he's available for the same price, for the same asking price, I'm in on it. But the Jets turned down that deal last year when the Eagles preferred to add Robbie Anderson instead of Golden Tate. Look, John Brown to me is definitely a more ideal option. But we see receivers get overpaid in an open market all the time. And Brown was really the only receiver, the only playmaker that made plays in that Baltimore offense last year. So to me, like, I would rather have that scenario. I would rather bring back DeSean Jackson. I'd be interested in bringing back a rookie. But I'm just trying to say if they're looking for a cheaper option here, right? So if they're trying to bring back Jordan Matthews as that insurance policy as your fourth receiver, and then you take a risk on a John Ross. You hope that maybe part of the reason he wasn't getting down the field last year had to do with the vanilla scheme that was Cincinnati or the fact that Andy Dalton just really isn't that good of a quarterback. I that's what you got to hope, is that, you know, a lot of it had to do with the system he was in. A lot of it had to do with just, you know, hopefully a change of scenery can change it, because some of it was mental. You know, Joe Goodberry, who is from The Athletic that writes about the Bengals, was kind of talking about how a lot of it had to do with the mental aspect, where this was a top 10, highly touted guy that broke a record, a big record at the NFL Combine. Like, the 40-yard dash is the most talked about thing at the Combine for, you know, the people that aren't super into it. And then he misses the entire first season, and he kind of comes in the next year, and the guy that was picked in a lower round, Tyler Boyd, emerges as that second guy, and you're kind of left being, what, the fourth weapon in that offense with the emergence of Joe Mixon as well. So I just think that with a change of scenery with Doug Peterson, to me, his scheme being way more in-depth, way more creative, I think he could get John Ross involved more if he's healthy. And again, you know, it's a low-risk, high-reward thing. If he doesn't pan out, you're not on the books for a $10 million deal, and you're not losing a guy that you need to rely upon because you have so many options already in the passing game. So I definitely get your concerns. I would much rather have the players you listed, but to me, this is an option that if it's for a fifth-round pick, I'm cool with taking that flyer because I was watching some of the film of John Ross against the Saints, and he was getting open, and Andy Dalton was just making some terrible throws or just not even looking his way. And, you know, while I haven't really gone in depth about all 13 games that John Ross appeared in last year, I did see him getting open in space in the red zone last year. I mean, the majority of his 7 touchdowns came in tight spaces. So there is some good things to work with. So I don't know. It's definitely a risk, but for a fifth-round pick, again, a lot of it has to do with compensation. For a fifth-round pick, I'm not going to hate on it.
I think it'll end up being higher than a fifth-round pick. Because
I'm with you, and that's probably why it won't happen.
He's a young guy still on a rookie contract. He has 2 more years, and you could pick up the option if you pick up this contract. I think it's going to be at least a 4, if not a 3. I mean, he's still...
If that's the case, I'm not in.
Yeah, I definitely can't see it happening, but there are teams that need wide receivers. Lou, how many times do we say that the Bills need one?
True.
The Jets need one. Somebody's going to overpay for receivers in a year that if you're not getting the top receivers in the draft, like you're going to have to benefit from role players, and a lot of these teams need top-end guys. Same in free agency. There isn't a lot of top-end guys, and you're going to have to benefit from role players. So teams are going to overpay for those guys that can contribute.
But
and
see,
if a team...
That's why I'm kind of concerned about John Brown, though, because I want the guy in this offense, but because there's not a lot of options, you're going to see Golden Tate and a John Brown maybe command more than they normally should in an open market.
Yeah, and then if so, you turn to plan B. That's always an option, but I think there's plan B, C, D out there before you even get to John Ross, which I think is like plan E or F. That's just my opinion on it. I just think for this team and for what this team is on offense, it's not time to bring in a weapon that you don't know what it is. Like, if this team was the 2016 Eagles and this was we brought in a Dorial Green Beckham, yes, I think this would be like the perfect circumstance to bring in a John Ross type, but you don't know what he is. And we saw this team trying to adapt to a Golden Tate where you knew what he was on tape, but this Eagles team didn't know what he was in the offense. So I really don't think they want to screw around and with a guy that they really don't know what he is at this point in his career. Is he that deep threat? Do you have to manufacture touches for him? Or do you want to bring in like a surefire deep threat, like a John Brown, like a Robbie Anderson, like a DeSean Jackson, a Mecole Hardman, any one of those guys that you know could take the top off the ball? Because frankly, you know I hate the box score scout, but 10 yards of reception for a deep threat,
but again, though,
that
like,
doesn't
how much
instill
of that had,
too much confidence in me.
How much of that had to do with the offense, though? Like, we got, he does deserve some blame, but we also got
to,
like,
absolutely.
That Bengals offense was vanilla as it comes. But, like, I'm with you. I just think, I don't think they even need a deep threat. Why I would be okay with this move isn't even because John Ross has the ability to burn you deep, because, again, me and you talked about it in that receiver podcast, our offseason options series, that the Eagles have guys that can make plays down the field. You don't have to be fast to make plays down the field. Look at Alshon Jeffrey. Look at a lot of these guys in this draft class, a Hakeem Butler, Kelvin Harmon, a N'Keal Harry. A lot of those guys aren't going to run under 4.4, right? I mean, so you can make plays down the field. Even Nelson Aguilar made crazy deep plays last year. I just like even watching some of Ross's red zone tape, which was the only way that it seemed he made an impact last year. And I like seeing him get – I just want a guy that can get open because of his athleticism and his explosion off the line of scrimmage. And there's probably better options, but it's cool that I guess there's just one more player that the Eagles can go to without breaking the bank to have that nice complementary speed receiver as your fifth passing option.
Definitely. And Howie Douglas.
That's right. That's their couple's name. Howie Douglas.
Hashtag Howie Douglas. Love it. Yeah. Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas know how to capitalize on assets by buying low and selling high. Could I see them buying low on a John Ross that was a former first-round pick? Absolutely. They've done it time and time again. You go out, you get a Ronald Darby, who was a high draft pick for the Bills, for not much at all. You end up getting Jordan Matthews back, only giving up a third in total. You go out and get Tim Jernigan for what? You traded back
peanuts,
like 11 spots,
yep,
or something crazy. This team is known to do that and take advantage of young players that don't fit the particular system, try to fit them into their system. If they like Ross in their system, can I see them taking a shot? Absolutely. Would it be my first pick? No, it would not.
I get that, definitely.
Like I said time and time again, until they prove me wrong, I'm going to trust any move that they make.
All right, well, there you have it. You kind of get both sides here of the John Ross debate and whether or not it would be a good move for the Eagles to trade for the former ninth overall pick. They were linked coming out of Washington. You know, the Eagles were looking for receivers at that time, and some people thought maybe the Eagles would go after him in the first round, but he didn't even really sniff being in the Eagles' range in the mid, you know, 10 to 20s as he went top 10, partially because he did break that 40-yard dash record, which still was impressive. We'll see if that speed, we even saw in the preseason. I remember I was covering the Bengals-Bills game for WGR up here in Buffalo, and Ross hit a big 60-yard bomb down the field. So we'll see. Maybe if they do get him, they see something in him, and if he can stay healthy, who knows? Maybe it's another great move that it's a bargain deal like you're talking about where they buy low and they sell high. But coming up next, we got to get into another player like that the Eagles took a chance on, and it worked out in a Tim Jernigan. They declined his option for the 2019 season. Does that spell the end for Tim Jernigan's run in Philadelphia? Me and Gina will get into it. That's coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Locked On Eagles, segment two of this three-segment Tuesday edition of Locked On Eagles. If you missed any of our past shows, please check them out on our Twitter accounts at Locked On Birds, at DiBiase LOE, or at Gino underscore LOE. And, of course, as always, the mothership, LockedOnEagles.com. So, the Eagles, in some news today, they declined defensive tackle Tim Jernigan's 2019 option, which wasn't a thing last year until Jernigan suffered a non-football-related injury that kept him out for the majority of the season last year until he returned against the New York Giants later on in the season. Did help out the Eagles. He rejuvenated that defensive tackle rotation that was just, you know, the entire defense was plagued with injuries, Gino, and he did have two sacks in the playoffs. So while they declined the option, which it was obviously going to happen, Jernigan had $11 million guaranteed on March 13th. They had to get out of that $13 million salary cap hit. I'm still holding out hope, though, that they can find him on a cheaper deal, bring him back. Hopefully he can agree to that, since his value right now really isn't at its highest at all. So in the open market, maybe he would rather just take a one-year deal with the Eagles and try to cash in next year. But I'm really hoping that they can bring back Jernigan next year, even if they bring interior defensive lineman earlier in the draft. I'm still hoping Jernigan can be a part of that rotation next year.
You know I love Tim Jernigan, and you know how much I thought he impacted, and you could see on tape how much he impacted this front four when he was healthy this season and in 2017. I mean, I don't think they would have made the playoffs if Jernigan didn't come back those last couple weeks. Like, I'll just say it. Like, they had some tough opponents that could run the ball up the middle. If they couldn't get after the quarterback and stop the run, I don't think we were going to see them play in Chicago week one of the playoffs. They continually need depth at that position, and losing Tim Jernigan would definitely hurt. But for any season to go out and replace a guy like Tim Jernigan, this would be the offseason to do
that's
so.
True. That's really true.
Yeah, we talk time and time again how much talent there is in the draft. You go out in the second round and get a guy like a Jerry Tillery or a Draymond Jones. Like, those guys can get off the ball just as well as a Tim Jernigan can. Maybe don't have as much power. Maybe don't play with as much leverage. But there are guys out there that are younger and cheaper options than Tim Jernigan. But that non-football injury is basically a blessing in disguise, because he would have had a lot of money coming his way this season.
I was going to say, luckily, was a massive cap hit.
Yeah, it was a big contract. I liked it at the time, but now we're here. Different contract. He opted out. They didn't pick up the option. I think he ends up coming back for cheaper money. There are going to be teams that will pay him, but I think he really enjoys playing with Fletcher Cox. I think he has definitely seen what this type of scheme can do for his career. In Baltimore, he played that 3-4, that that two-gap style system where he basically just had to make plays for the linebackers. Now he can get upfield, get after the quarterback, suits his natural position that he played at Florida State. And I would love to see Tim Jernigan come back. We need at least 4 to 5 defensive tackles that we can rotate in there at any given time. You bring in one in the first couple rounds of the draft, I could even see them doubling up in this draft, like how they've picked multiple position units, like cornerback a couple years ago with Rasul Douglas and Sidney Jones back-to-back in 2013 with Jordan Matthews and Josh Huff back-to-back. And wait, was that 2013 or 2014?
That was 2014 was Huff and Matthews.
Oh, right in the middle. Okay,
Marcus,
yeah.
That was the Marcus Smith draft. Ew.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I think there are plenty of options to go out and replace him. Do I want to see him back? Yes, but they definitely can't afford a cap hit like they were paying him.
Yeah, and they can add other guys even in free agency. Maybe a Bo Allen's a cap casualty for Tampa Bay, and you bring him back in the mix. But I really like the fit with Jernigan here. Like you said, he can just play off instincts. He can get after the quarterback himself. He doesn't have to make plays for the linebackers, considering we don't even really use linebackers in this defense a whole lot. And I think right now his value is at its lowest. He should come in a defense he knows he's made plays in. He loves being here, clearly. He was even mic'd up in that Bears playoff game, was talking about how much he loved all of his teammates, and even the picture of in the locker room where he's got the grill on and the ski mask with Doug Peterson. Like, he just seems like he really fits in well, and he won a championship here, and he was a big part of that. So hopefully that kind of, with his value already being pretty low, convinces him to take less money, and the Eagles can have him and Fletcher Cox still be the 1-2. You add a young guy. Potentially, I like the way Trayvon Hester played down the stretch. Who knows? Maybe you even wait and you go like a guy like Bugs from Alabama and a Kalen Saunders, who out of, you know, the Senior Bowl really got to the quarterback and showed some good things. So Tim Jernigan gives you a little bit more flexibility, whereas if there's not a guy you have at 25 high on your board, you can kind of wait on defensive tackle if Jernigan's there. Whereas if you don't bring Jernigan back, then you really got to bring in somebody, because you cannot have Trayvon Hester being your starting defensive tackle next year. But like you said, they have a lot of options. I'm just hoping Tim Jernigan is one of those options that they prioritize, and I think it gets done. Let's take a break here on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. When we come back, is Jason Peters next, as the Eagles continue to try to free up salary cap space to hopefully go add some big-time talent in free agency? Is JP next when it comes to potentially being a cap casualty or a product of a restructure? That's coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to our final segment of this Locked On Eagles podcast, Tuesday, February 26th, just a couple days away from the NFL Combine. We will have our preview of the Combine up later this week. Talk about some guys that have a lot to lose at the Combine, have a lot to gain. We'll get into some guys to watch for the Eagles specifically. That's coming up later this week on the Locked On Eagles podcast. So last segment, me and Gino kind of got into Tim Jernigan and whether or not they should bring him back on a restructured contract as they declined the 2019 option. They had a 2019 option put in place and a 2020 option after Tim Jernigan suffered a non-football related injury off the field last summer. So that's one more guy that they clear about, I think, $7 million in cap space, depending on if they bring him back, maybe a little bit less. But regardless, they free up some more money to spend this offseason. The next guy that's really been the next candidate for a restructure, or potentially being the cap casualty that people have speculated for a couple years now, is Jason Peters. He's almost 40 years old. Gino, he has a $10.7 million cap hit, much like Tim Jernigan. I'm really hoping for either a restructure or I'm keeping him on the deal that he is on right now, because having him here while the Eagles are still competing for championships is huge. Even 75% of Jason Peters last year wiped Khalil Mack off the face of the earth in that playoff game.
Definitely. I think it's just such a tough spot to be in, and I wish this team would have addressed offensive tackle like a couple years ago.
They haven't really took one high since Lane Johnson.
No, it's actually the position that they wait the longest to draft, yeah. Funny enough. So right now, I think there are a couple options. One, you draft an offensive tackle high, like maybe the first pick if a Dalton Risner falls or one of the top guys fall, or you end up with like a Yadni Kajust in that 53 to 57 range. Maybe one of those guys can play right away. I think Risner will give you a better option to play right away. But ultimately, I don't think Peters is back, one, at the price he is, and two, at all. I just think they need to get younger, and they need to take a lot of money off the books. Like, he's the one contract you look at that's simple enough. You get rid of it, you clear almost $10 million in cap space. Like, it just makes too much sense not to get rid of him. If he wants to come back on a restructured deal, possibly, but has he ever been inclined to do that in the past? No. I just don't see him doing it now either.
I don't know. I'm kind of on the other side of this because I just saw JP again last year. I know he couldn't finish games, but he appeared in all 16, and down the stretch, he still looked like the Jason Peters of old that might be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And that, to me, doesn't stop you from adding young talent. You saw JP and him coaching up Big V during that Super Bowl run, and you still have a Jordan Mailata here to develop, and maybe you bring in a guy like Yanni Kajust, or you wait in the second or fourth round to bring in a tackle, or you move back into the third round. I don't think that stops you from JP staying here. I do get the money thing. 10.7, while it's not even, though, it's not top 10, when it comes to paid tackles, it's a decent number, but at the same time, I think the Eagles are going to have, and me and you talk about it all the time, where salary cap, I think people get concerned with it a little bit too much. They're going to have space still this year to work with. The Tim Jernigan potential restructure or just letting him walk. I think they're going to extend Nelson Agholor to get that $9.5 million hit down. The Nick Foles contract's going to come off the books. That $20 million won't be there anymore. The Rodney McLeod cap restructure, the 6.1 that's coming over from 2018. And every single year we talk about the Eagles not having enough money to do this, the Eagles not having enough money to do that, to bring back Nigel Bradham. Howie Roseman finds a way to get it done, and I know it's a tough spot to pay a 37-year-old left tackle almost $11 million, but with how good the Eagles still are right now and how good this offensive line still is. Like, they're still at the height of their powers with Jason Kelce still maybe here a couple more years. I'm trying to just milk this. I'm trying to get as much out of Jason Peters, just this washcloth. I'm trying to get every last drop out of this guy, of the juice that he has still to be the great left tackle that I saw down the stretch. So we'll see. I'm really hoping for a restructure, but I don't know. Even if they bring in a guy, I don't want to see Halipuli Vaati Vaitai be the starter next year at left tackle.
No, I think that's the worst case scenario, honestly. When it's all said and done after this offseason, I think what happens is they bring in a young guy, and they bring in not a bridge quarterback, but a bridge offensive tackle. I think you let JP walk, and you bring in maybe a guy like a Ty Nasecki, who is he was out of Washington. He was that swing tackle for them, their third tackle. Have him compete with guys like Big V and Mailata. Maybe Mailata takes the next step. Maybe Big V steps his game up in a competition. Who knows? I don't expect that to happen. But if worse comes to worse, you fall back on a veteran tackle for one, two seasons until your Yadni Kajust or your Titus Howard or Greg Little or whoever you draft is ready to go next year or the year after that.
I can't tell you how much I want Jordan Mailata to work out, even if it's like at a guard. Just the athleticism, what we saw in the preseason, that burst off the line of scrimmage, I'm really rooting for Mailata.
I agree, and I think he definitely has a good chance. You saw the jump he made in 4 weeks from the first game of the preseason to the last game of the preseason. You look at a guy like Alejandro Villanueva, who was a former Eagle defensive tackle who went to the Steelers and ended up being their franchise left tackle. He's a guy who has a lot less athletic ability than a guy like Jordan Mailata has. He's just as intelligent as Jordan Mailata is, so he learned how to overhaul his game. But I think the athleticism and the sheer power that Mailata brings makes him perfect for the tackle position. So if they could hit a diamond in the rough with Mailata, it would be great, but you can't put all your chips in that basket.
No, absolutely
is what
not.
It comes down to.
Yeah, you kind of just hope he... You don't plan for him to be this diamond in the rough, but if he is, like, you already have him on the roster making basically nothing. If you get another JP, I mean, remember, Jason Peters came out of Arkansas as an undrafted rookie, and he was a tight end, and now he's probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And while the Bills do get credit for getting him in there, the Eagles are the ones that traded him and had him for the majority of his prime. If they found a way to do that again with Mailata, it'd be really cool. But yeah, I agree with you. Don't plan for Mailata to be that takeover left tackle. But it would be a nice, incentive. It would be a nice bonus if they got that for a seventh round pick.
Yeah, and worst case scenario, if you really can't figure anything out, you also have Lane Johnson, a top five tackle that you can move to left tackle if worse came to worse.
We kind of went away from, like, it always was the plan, it seemed, was Lane Johnson moving to left tackle eventually, but I don't know if the Eagles would consider it anymore.
Yeah, I think the franchise loves him at that right tackle position. I wouldn't move him from his natural position of where he is right now. You saw him a couple years back, that Sam Bradford year, when JP went down, and he had to step in and play at left tackle for a majority of the season. Wasn't his natural fit, but if worse came to worse, I'm taking him over Big V for 16 games.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing, too, is pass rushers don't just stay on one side anymore. A lot of the time you had a left tackle, you wanted your best tackle at left tackle because not only he's covering the quarterback's blind side, but a lot of time the best pass rusher was on that side. Like, Von Miller plays on the right side, Khalil Mack over on the right side. A lot of the time, pass rushers rotate now, so you need two good tackles.
100%, and it's unfortunate that JP is where he is, and he just isn't able to stay healthy because, like you said, he can eliminate some of the best edge rushers in football. If he wasn't so susceptible to these injuries, would I be more inclined to bring him back? Absolutely, but you see the difference Big V makes in games when he can plan for a week and games when he has to step in during the middle of a game. You cannot continue to move forward with that same plan and have Big V ready on standby to try his best to block somebody on short notice because it just hasn't worked. And I don't want to have to deal with that for another season, especially now that Carson is going to be back healthy. You have to shore up that position. You can't do it with what you had in JP. If you think you can for one more season to make by, go for it. But I just think there are better options. If you can get one of these young guys that can step in right away and play, go for it. I think there are multiple options this team can go to. And I just think resorting to JP and paying him what you're paying now is not the route to go.
Yeah, hopefully a full offseason could get him healthy. Hopefully he could restructure, but regardless, we'll see what they do. But for now, they did decline Tim Jernigan's option. They have some decisions to make, some big ones, by that March 13th date when free agency opens, because you kind of want to see what you have in-house, kind of make some decisions there, and then kind of move forward with that plan of free agency, knowing that you need a left tackle potentially or a defensive tackle. That's going to do it for today's edition of Locked On Eagles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. For my co-host Gino Camilleri, I'm Louis DiBiase signing off. Please subscribe to the podcast on whatever podcast platform you listen to. Check out our written content as well on LockedOnEagles.com and follow all our discussions on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiase LOE, and at Gino_LOE. Once again, for Gino Camilleri, I'm Louis DiBiase signing off. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. And as always, let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.